Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
That sound getting us started on a Wednesday. It's FST, Mike Lewis, Dave Martinez. Speaking around the world of the NFL and around the world of fantasy football for the next hour. Excited to talk to you. I'm not here on most Wednesdays, but able to make it today.
Shalom.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully, some of you out there are atoning for your sins over the course of the last year. Frankly, all of you should be. You rascals.
Yeah, really.
But thanks for listening. Yeah, get it together, everybody. So, thanks for listening to us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, on TuneIn Radio, on iHeartRadio, and a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. Thank you. Appreciate you listening. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Dane is at Spittin' Speeds. We're going to open up the phone lines. We'll do it in the next segment. 844-843-6879. Give us a call in about 10 minutes, and we'll 15 minutes or so, and we'll get it going. Oh, we'll take some calls that are necessary. So some major news items. I'm pouring around stuff last night and this morning, and then I see this news about the Bill Belichick book that's going to be coming out. And
oh boy,
it is lending credence to what was potentially going to be a divorce between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. So 350 people were interviewed on this, and it is. ESPN's Ian O'Connor is the author of it. The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. So he did it after last season, and it does lend more credence to the original reports that Brady and Belichick were on rough times, rocky waters, whatever you want to call them, rough waters. So it looks like Brady was ready to call it quits, but realized that once Jimmy Garoppolo was out, that he was sort of all in because he said he would play to his mid-40s. So if they had traded Garoppolo and then Brady walked away, he knew it could potentially hurt the team and put him in a really bad light with fans.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I had not heard about this just yet. I mean, I know the issue, but I hadn't heard about the book. And I've actually been saying for a while, I'm going to love it when one of these guys in 5 years has a tell-all book and we start to hear about kind of what was swept under the rug. You know, I mean, listen, Blewett, as a Jets fan, and I know you're a Steelers fan, like, I have been wishing for the fall of Rome for a while now, right?
Yeah.
So don't get it twisted. I'm acknowledging that I'm a little kind of giddy with this kind of news, but I really did think that this offseason was different than others. You know, they lose Deion Lewis. They lose their left tackle. They, at one point, it looked like they were going to lose their offensive and defensive coordinators to head coaching jobs, right? It was clear that there was some kind of drama around the Jimmy G trade. It was clear with the Alex Guerrero stuff, Gronk talking about retirement, you know, all this stuff. It seemed like we were nearing the fall of Rome. Tom Brady can only do this so much. The Uggs, the avocados, the water, the sleep chambers can only last for so long. You know what I mean? So I was really thinking that this could be the year. That's why I was not giving people the New England over as season win totals. I know that you're alternate as well, but I thought this could be the year where they kind of come back to the pack a little bit and win 10 or 11 games. But this just adds fuel to the fire that there is something going on there. And we're going to hear all the gory details, you know, in years go by. Like, you know, when Josh McDaniels writes his book in 15 years, you know, we're going to definitely know about this all.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the one that I wasn't on that bandwagon that this was the year that it could be falling apart. I know you. Not falling apart. Falling apart is rough, but take a step back. Because the division obviously is weak yet again. Even if the Dolphins are looking good so far, the division is not that great. So I know you said that. George Kurtz said that, and some other people as well. And I don't think it's a bad take to have. I just think they're not there yet. It's Brady is playing at too high of a level still. We'll give him another 8 games or so before we can judge it. But in my opinion, Brady will be playing at a high enough level still that it won't be an issue for the team to make the playoffs, advance in the playoffs, and the like. The game against Jacksonville notwithstanding this past week. So
I guess I thought one thing, Blue. Yeah, so, and you're right. My take was that they would fall back to the pack. I didn't think it was a problem for the division. What I did say, and I think I mentioned it here on air on FST as well. What I did say, though, is that they may not be able to get that home field or that first round bye. And then, as we've seen, if in January they had to go to Jacksonville or they have to go to Pittsburgh, although who knows about Pittsburgh these days, or go somewhere instead of having like the Chargers or the Jags or the Steelers or whoever it is come to New England, I think that could have been the difference. Like if they have to go to Kansas City, whereas instead of Kansas City coming to them, that would be the difference for me with them taking a small step back in the regular season instead of being the 1 seed, they might be the 3 seed, and then deeper in January is where it could come calling.
I'll give Brady credit for protecting Josh Gordon a little bit here. Jim Gray basically asked him what the expectations are for Josh Gordon. He said, I hate to make expectations and projections. It's not really fair. He's never met Josh personally, just like he hadn't met some of the guys that have come in the last week. So we'll see how it goes this week, and hopefully he can work hard, put the team first, and end up helping us in any role that he can find for himself on the team. So I think that's really fair for him to do. I am also pumping the brakes on Josh Gordon's expectations. I have him in 2 leagues, but I have to see how he assimilates with the team, how he learns this playbook, and how quickly he can come along. The success rate of wide receivers changing teams in general isn't really that good the first year. Doing it in the middle of the year, even less so. Now, the quarterback and the wide receiver individually have a tremendous amount of talent. The one guy has the greatest quarterback resume of all time. Some people call him the GOAT. I never go there because cross-era comparisons are a difficult thing for me to do. I would consider him among the greatest NFL players of all time. Josh Gordon, super talented. He's played 11 games in the last 4 full seasons. So I don't have a lot of high expectations for him. I took a couple of swings with him in leagues where there's no money on the line, and I'm not moving him just yet. I heard you and Scott talking about trades and all that kind of stuff, and people are getting out of whack with it. But Josh Gordon is one of those guys. You can float him out there to see what you get, not unlike what the Browns did.
Yeah, I think that's right, because here's the thing. And, we know this in this kind of capitalistic society. All it takes is one. Blewett. All it takes is one owner that, has a thing for Josh Gordon, and they will completely overpay for him. I'm with you. I don't have much faith that Josh Gordon is going to have this tremendous impact. Okay, a number of reasons why. One, we all know the cloud that hangs over him. I don't know if I can count on him to be stable and available for the last, whatever it is, 12, 13 games. Remember in the preseason, he needed a quote-unquote brief respite. What happens if he needs a brief respite in week 12 when you need him in the fantasy playoffs, So I don't like him because of that reason. 2, his big season was 2013, Mike. That was 5 years ago, Mike. I could do a lot of things 5 years ago that I can't do anymore. I could go out drinking on a Saturday night 5 years ago in a way that I can't anymore. So I think that's something to be considered, right? The other thing is, when Josh Gordon had these big years and stuff, he was the only weapon in Cleveland. I said this when I thought he was going to be with the Browns this year, that all of a sudden there's more mouths to feed. There's actual playmakers in Cleveland now, so he might have to share the load. And if that was the case in Cleveland, of course that's the case in New England with Gronk, with Hogan, with the returning Edelman. And Brady is not a quarterback that's going to force feed anybody that's not named Rob Gronkowski. He's going to go where the matchups dictate. And so for all those reasons, I'm off Josh Gordon. Let someone else make that move. I would trade Josh Gordon. I would dangle Josh Gordon. I would not look to acquire Josh Gordon.
Yeah, especially if the guy's a Patriots fan, because the reality is he trusts Gronk for obvious reasons, and he trusts Edelman because Edelman picks up first downs regularly. I don't think Brady's going to let – the more I thought about this, and I had reservations about Edelman only because Belichick doesn't have time for this stuff,
right?
Getting a suspension like that. But – going back to the power struggle we just talked about, I don't think Brady's going to let Belichick throw Edelman under the bus or keep him out or have McDaniels reduce his workload or whatever. If Edelman comes back and he's in shape and he can do what he does, count on double-digit targets a game. That's my opinion moving forward. So before we get back to the other drama-filled wide receiver situation, let's talk about Fantasy Factor, because it's the only DFS site with exclusively single-entry contests. It's a fun and recreational place to play with smaller leagues and flatter prize pools. They have great free promos like Survivor, Super Bowl Squares, and March Madness Bracket Contest. So sign up today. Go to FantasyFactor.com. That's FantasyFactor.com. So turning the page over to my team, the Pittsburgh Steelers. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but a little bit more drama now. Mike Tomlin effectively confirmed Antonio Brown's absence, said he didn't know why. Then Drew Rosenhaus, Antonio Brown's agent, everybody knows Drew Rosenhaus, I believe that's a football fan, and Antonio Brown's from Florida, from the Miami area, so Drew Rosenhaus is very connected there. So he said that the Steelers were aware of it and that he had a personal matter. I'm just going to ask you straight up, who do you believe? Because one guy says he didn't know, one guy says he did know. Mike Tomlin.
I think Tomlin knows. I think Tomlin knows. I think Antonio Brown, remember, this is also coming off. You saw those kind of like him trolling on Twitter. You know, there was a fan being like, oh, it's all Big Ben making AB. And then AB was like, oh, trade me and find out. And then he doesn't show up to work the next day. I think Tomlin knows what's going on and he just has to put a good face on it because, you know, I don't want to go too far with it. But what's going on to me, honestly, Blewett, and I know you're a Steelers fan, you know, going into this season, I thought in the NFC and the AFC North that Baltimore might unravel, that Cincy might unravel. And what I said was the key was consistent with both of those was that they had a head coach who had been there for a long time and a quarterback that might be on the downside of their career. And that's what I thought was the problem in Baltimore and in Cincinnati. Those two teams look all right, but the same thing is the case in Pittsburgh. Could it be the case, Blewett, that Mike Tomlin's message has gotten stale, that he's losing the room, that like it's a little bit more like with Lev Bell not showing up, AB thinking it's okay to not come to work. You know, it feels like something is on fire over there in Pittsburgh.
I read an article yesterday about Mike Tomlin stating that Mike Tomlin had lost the room. Here's the one thing I'd reject about your premise. I don't think Roethlisberger is on the downside. I think he's nearing the end of his career, but I don't think his play yet necessarily suggests that he's fallen off a cliff or taken a step backward. The home road split thing, you can use that as evidence, and I understand that. But beyond that, the Antonio Brown thing, if you read into it a little bit more, it is worse than you would see at first glance because it was an issue with a fan. With a reporter actually telling him he was going to break his jaw. That was a couple of weeks ago. Then there's this other issue with the former PR staffer where he says, trade me. Then there's a fight, a heated argument on the sidelines between him and Randy Fitchner, who is the new offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. By the way, can you tell me which player leads the NFL in targets through 2 weeks?
My first guess would be DeAndre Hopkins, but given the way you're framing it, it's probably Antonio Brown.
It is Antonio Brown. He leads Michael
Thomas. Michael
Thomas
might be a guess. Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. He leads Michael Thomas by three. He's got 33. Michael Thomas has 30. So was he upset that Juju got 19 targets the other day and he didn't get quite as many? I don't know. But he got like 16 or 17. Can't remember the exact number. Going further. He basically blew past reporters and was, you know, very close to walking off the field before the end of the game, it seems. But he's unhappy with something. I've said for the last couple of years, I think Antonio Brown gets a little bit of a pass for being a diva. Mm-hmm. But he is that. The Facebook Live in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Arguments with Ben and
wasn't
Todd
he on Dancing
Haley
with the Stars?
And now Randy Fitchner. Yeah, I believe he was. That's okay.
He might have been.
I don't care. That's a little promotional thing. That's usually a positive image thing, and at least you're working on something positive. Getting into arguments with people and his Instagram. I followed him for a bit on Instagram just to see what was up. It's crazy out there with Antonio Brown. It's tons of drama. Baby mama stuff and yelling at people and throwing people under the bus. It's crazy. So I can't really blame the coach here. And what I do think is that if Tomlin knew, Tomlin would say he knew. He wouldn't go up there and say, I don't know why he wasn't there, if he knew why. So I think Drew Rosenhaus is protecting his guy and didn't really tell anybody. And if he did, I don't know who it was.
So let me ask you this, though, boy, because, you know, we started this with the Belichick book and the potential, whether you call it the fall of Rome or the potential discord that's going in there behind the scenes in New England, right? And there's all, and this has been the case for the last, you know, year or so. There's been rumblings with the Alex Guerrero thing and all this stuff, right? Stuff that is behind the curtain, right, that we may not find out about. I, generally speaking, I'm saying the same thing in Pittsburgh. You know, these guys, New England and Pittsburgh, have been at the top of the food chain in the AFC for the better part of the last decade, Blewett, you know, at some point. It's the same with the San Antonio Spurs, you know, it's the same, you know, at some point, the cycle is going to change when you have up-and-coming young quarterbacks. Ben and Brady are getting old, the same as, you know, the same as Eli, the same as Phillip Rivers, the same as Drew Brees. These cycles turn in sports. And in the same way that there's maybe smoke and fire in New England, I'm just saying the same looks like it might be true behind the curtain in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I understand that completely, and I've said this before. I'm really bummed that they blew the end of last year. Now, it obviously points to the fact that Ryan Shazier got hurt,
yeah.
But New England won a Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski, so no excuses. A really important piece got hurt, but other guys, I remember when the Packers beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl, they had lost like 16 guys to injured reserve. The Eagles won the Super Bowl last year, missing key pieces. So no excuses.
Yeah, they're MVP potentially quarterback.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly right. So no excuses, and I'm really bummed because I think that was Ben's last chance to win the Super Bowl. And this drama is just adding to my thoughts regarding that. And I put this one squarely on Antonio Brown. I don't think he's got anybody to blame other than him trying to get in the right mindset. The Le'Veon Bell thing, I think I've explained it in detail. I think it's really complicated, and I don't blame him for doing this. I'm unsure if he's going to get that big, fat bag of money that he wants, the exact number that he wants. But as you've said, it only takes one. Team.
It does only take one. And the other thing, real quick, I know we got to go to break, is I've been saying now for the better part of 2 years that I think this is part of why Lev Bell is negotiating in this way, because he knows that Big Ben is towards the end. And I've been saying it, and I'll say it again right now. If you are Le'Veon Bell going into your age, whatever it is, 27, 28 season, why would you sign a long-term deal with Pittsburgh when you know Big Ben is going to about to walk away? If you are that dude in your prime, why do you want to stay for a reload or a rebuild in Pittsburgh when you could be the cherry on top for another team like Green Bay, Houston, and a ton of others if you sign as a free agent? I think Bell knew this, and I think he knew he didn't want to be in Pittsburgh long term.
These rules are really extending these guys' careers, though. If they keep calling flags like they called on Clay Matthews,
yeah,
maybe Ben can hang in there for a year or two longer than we thought, and Phil Rivers, and I don't know about Eli, but some of these other guys. Brady's in his 40s, for Christ's sake, and Drew Brees, too. So we're going to come back. We'll open up the phone lines in case you want to ask us questions at 844-843-6879. Dana and I will take a look at some snap counts right after this so you can discern which players to start, which players to sit moving forward. It's FST. We'll be right back.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build and optimize lineups for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
We're back on FST on this Wednesday. A lot of waiver wire talk going on. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. We'll get to it in the third segment here as well. But before we get to that, if you enjoyed playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with pros, using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, then try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. So forget having to create multiple lineups and ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. There's no more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. We do have a caller. It's Andrew from Boston. I lived in Boston for 8 years, all throughout the 90s, basically, almost 9 years. So, Andrew, what do you got for us?
Nice. I have a question. I'm very worried about my team. I'm 0-2. I got Russell Wilson, Saquon Barkley, Tevin Coleman, Devontae Adams, Jarvis Landry, Gronk, Chris Thompson, and I'm 0-2. And I think it's too soon to blow it up, but I don't know what to do.
I think the two guys that jump out to me are Russell Wilson and Saquon Barkley. The rest of your team, I don't really have a problem with. Devontae and Gronk and a couple other teams. Gronk had a bad game. It's all right. He's going to have a whole bunch of great games. Don't worry about that. You said Devontae Adams, Jarvis Landry. I'm okay with those guys. Saquon, you got problems. Hopefully it's a PPR league because you can get 14 catches for 15 yards and still come out with a good week. The Russell Wilson thing, I think he ran into a defense that is really – look, their offensive line stinks. They're not going to have much of a running game. But I think he ran into really the type of team that can give them a lot of problems, teams that can really pressure the quarterback. When Russell's going up against those teams, I think you might see some similar performances. But on the whole, Wilson's been really good here. If he stays healthy, I don't think you can panic about it. How are you trending on your points scored versus the other teams in your league? Forget the record. Throw the record out.
Week one, I would have beat team except for the team I played.
Right, so that's like one. 90. And then so through 2 weeks, you probably got a pretty good point total. You had a bad week out of Gronk. You had an okay week out of Russell Wilson. And is it a PPR league, for the record?
Yeah, I am in a PPR league.
All right, so go ahead. One more thing. So
week one, I ran up against Tyreek Hill and Alvin Kamara.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
And then last week, I got against Juju and Ben Ross.
That'll do it.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say, and I'm going to let Dane comment on this in a second, because Dane and I had this discussion literally last week. Do you get concerned when teams are 0-2, even 0-3? It gets to a point where you get concerned about the record, but if your points are trending the right way, then it's a sign that you don't blow it up. You ran into a couple of buzzsaws scoring-wise, and you got bad beats. So if you're trending and scoring more than the rest of the league, on the whole, if that trend continues of your team scoring a lot of points, you'll be fine record-wise. Right, Dane?
Yeah, I agree with you, Blewett. Listen, and I said it with Scotty last hour. You know, at this point of the season, we're getting so many chicken littles with the sky is falling. And how do I trade this person? Do I blow it up? You know, Andrew over here in Boston, he's saying, like, when he was reeling off his team, there's no one really I find issue with. You mentioned Russell Wilson, but, like, what are you going to do about Russell Wilson? You're not going to drop Russell Wilson. You're not going to trade Russell Wilson, right? And a lot of these players, not only Andrew in Boston, Andrew, I think you just grin and bear. Bro, there are better days ahead. You know, you kind of answered your own question. You ran into buzzsaws in week one and two. But my larger point is this, Blewett. You've seen the movie Braveheart, Blewett?
Yes.
Okay, so you know that first war scene, right, where the horses are charging and William Wallace has, like, the tree trunk spears and the horses are charging and he's like, hold, hold, hold. Yeah. That's what this time of the fantasy season is about. Unfortunately, the right answer for a lot of these players and a lot of these teams that are worried, the right answer is just to hold. You can't drop Devontae Freeman or David Johnson or some of these guys, right? You can't trade them because you're going to get 60 cents on the dollar. I know people don't want to hear it, but the answer is just like William Wallace says, hold.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. I went through all my teams last night. I was extremely inactive on the waiver wire. I just passed in a bunch of instances. I picked up Philip Lindsay in one league last week. I didn't even play him in week two. And I'm not moving guys around. I dropped Philip Lindsay. I picked up last week to drop James Washington. Now James Washington is a hot pickup because he played a whole bunch of snaps. But the reality is, I'm not going to transform my team when I pick up Ito Smith or Tyler Boyd. It's unlikely. If I had a hole at wide receiver, I'd do it. But I got some guys that are banged up, and I got Sony Michel coming back, and I got Mark Ingram and Julian Edelman, all these guys coming back. That's the snapshot I have to look at 3 weeks out. Am I going to drop just pick a name. Am I going to drop – I can't do Calvin Ridley because he just scored. But there's, like, I'm not going to drop certain guys. Marlon Mack was the one guy. I was like, do I ditch him now? That Colts running back situation looks terrible. But does Ito Smith improve it?
No.
Probably not. And when Devontae Freeman comes back, Ito Smith is third. There's a chance that Marlon Mack could be first on that depth chart at some point during the season. Barring catastrophic injury, there's no chance for Ito Smith to do that. So I'll just hang on to Marlon Mack and not play him unless I really need him to. So there you go. It gives you some sense of what our thoughts are there. So let's take a look at some snap counts because we want to try to sift through some of this stuff. And
yeah.
Dane and I talked about the couple of – I'll go to mine first, the first one I wanted to see because it's going to lead to me cutting one of these players probably is Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard. Cameron Brate with two bagels to start the season in fantasy was unexpected. Really did not see that coming at all. And now it doesn't matter. I think if Fitz is there or if Jameis comes back. By the way, if they play Jameis, if Fitz plays another good game and they're not playing Jameis, that'd be
I think they're already not playing Jameis. Even if he lays an egg on Monday night. He's 2-1. Right. He's leading the league in passing yards or something like that already. I think he is the starter in week four for Tampa, regardless of what happens Monday Night Football.
So I think because of Tampa's inability to run the ball and them going extremely pass heavy with Fitz, you see this breakdown here. Offensive snaps for O.J. Howard, 46. Cameron Brate, 14. Eau Claire and Cross, I don't even know who these guys are, got as many offensive snaps as Cameron Brate. Eau Claire had 17, more than him. Cross had 11, slightly less. Those guys are big special teams players. And Cameron Brate, really, all the way down at 14. It's early, but with the way we stream tight ends, and Austin Seferian Jenkins can be out there in some leagues, and Will Disley and Austin Hooper and other guys, I don't know that they dramatically improve your tight end position, but if you're streaming, I think you can drop Cameron Brate as long as Fitz is quarterback.
Yep, I agree with you. And listen, I've never been on tight ends where the team has two tight ends, you know, O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. You know, I warned Scott Engel all offseason about Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron. You know, never, I've said this before, not since Gronk and the Murderer have the team been able to sustain tight ends in fantasy, and that, like, you hear running back timeshares, but I'm not going to buy into a tight end timeshare. And I think your point that we've talked about on this show is so valid here, that for tight ends on a week-to-week basis, it's just about who scores the touchdown anyway. If you don't have Kelsey or Gronk or Ertz, it's just about who scores the touchdown anyway. So I'm completely okay with cutting Cameron Brate. I know you may have liked him going into the season, but at this point, and you did. But the guys that you're going to be able to find on the waiver wire are just as good as a dart throw if they score a touchdown than anybody else, you know, at this point in time. So I'm completely okay with dropping that.
Yeah, so I would say also we're just taking a look at this past week's snaps. And we'll move over to the next one that Dane wanted to do. Denver running back.
Yes. Ooh,
this is rough. So they spread it around a little bit, but Phillip Lindsay had the most at 28. Devontae Booker was second at 22, and Royce Freeman was third at 16. He only played 16 offensive snaps. So that is trending really poorly for where that guy was drafted. He's still a rookie. There's still time to go, but so's Phillip Lindsay, and he's out there killing it. Explosive, that guy. Really unbelievable. That guy just came out of nowhere. We didn't talk about him at all. But here's one thing, by the way. I love Scott Engel and all that good jazz, and he's the king and the Hall of Famer and all that kind of stuff. I disagree with the notion that people on the waiver wire can't transform your team. I just got through saying I was extremely inactive, but it doesn't mean you can't take a shot on Ito Smith, and then Tevin Coleman gets hurt, and he can transform your team. I'll tell you what, I'm in a really deep
But that would take another event in order for that to happen. You know?
I agree. But I'm saying it. This is what we're constantly doing with waiver wires is tweaking the end of our bench to maybe project it being good for the long term. It's the reason I drafted James Conner. I'm not clairvoyant. Sure. I'm just trying to come up with an option that gets you to more playing time and more touches. You know, I won a league a few years ago, two leagues, in fact, for the exact same reason. I was a Mark Ingram owner, and as it got to the end of the year, I was getting worried because he was, at that point, always hurt. So I picked up Tim Hightower.
Tim Hightower, yeah.
And Tim Hightower went off for a month.
He did.
And I won two
leagues.
Well,
that was also because Sean Payton had him on his own fantasy team. You know, didn't we hear that? Like, Sean, no, seriously. Or like, in the Saints fantasy football league, he was, like, facing Mark Ingram or something like that himself. And there was some stories about that. I don't know. We could fact check me on that. But that, like, he was literally vested himself in Hightower over Ingram. But there's some reason. He certainly hates Mark Ingram. I hear you. When it comes to Denver, though, I think the interesting point is, as you mentioned, Devontae Booker was actually second in the snap count. That's the part that's intriguing to me, Blewett. Yeah. You know, yeah, Philip Disley is it's Will Disley. Philip Lindsay is a thing, right? But I thought the way this was going to play out after week one was more a traditional timeshare, where Royce Freeman was going to be this early down guy, this in-between-the-tackles guy, and that Lindsay was going to be a straight PPR kind of guy, and that Devontae Booker owners were the ones who would be in trouble, that he was the one that was going to get sacrificed without a chair when the music stopped. But then when I see the snap count of week two and Booker is right back in the mix over Freeman, that's the one that gives me cause for pause. Like, it's clear now that Lindsay is a factor in this offense, but the question for me is as it relates to Booker and Freeman. I want to have faith in Freeman, but not if Booker is getting more snaps than him.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, he's listed here on Pro Football Reference at 5'8", 190. He was smaller than that in college, yeah. So I bring those up to say that a guy that's 5'8", 190 obviously is not going to be a bell cow back. I think they're always going to have to mix it up. But if he's getting the important carries and he's getting those pass-catching opportunities, then I think – Philip Lindsay, for right now, is the guy to own. It doesn't make Royce Freeman cuttable, but it makes Royce Freeman benchable for sure. I know many of you drafted him pretty high. I talked to Ryan O'Halloran. He's a beat writer at the Denver Post for the Broncos. And he said Royce Freeman's going to be the guy. And he never even mentioned Philip Lindsay. And I'm not criticizing Ryan at all. He's a very good beat writer. He used to be a Jags beat writer. Now he's a Denver beat writer. And I think he's probably as stunned as anybody, but really interesting to see that. We'll go to the next team because this is one.
Real quick, Blue, would you trade for Royce Freeman? Because of your point, Lindsay is not built for the long term. Eventually, they got to go back to Freeman. If there's a Freeman owner panicking, would you trade for Royce Freeman?
I think you could probably get him 50 cents on the dollar, so for somewhere. The wise owners will hang on to him, but you could probably fleece somebody 50 cents on the dollar and get somebody a wide receiver in exchange or maybe a different running back. I don't know. But I think times ahead, it's difficult to predict how rookies are going to play at times, but I think there's good times ahead for Royce Freeman. You can't suspect that a guy of Philip Lindsay's size would just tough it out for 16 games. That would be rare. We'll go to the New England Patriots running back snap count for this past week. Well, you can't expect Sony Michel to be so good right out of the gate, but James White had 34 of them. Rex Burkhead had 14 of them. Sony Michel, 13 of them. Now, the Pats were down. So they're
playing Jacksonville.
They probably went to heavier wide receiver sets through most of the game, and especially once they got down in the second half. So James White out there for many of those passing downs, clearly. But Burkhead and Michel, 14 and 13 snaps, you're not going to get anything done with that level of snap count. But who do they have this week? I have it.
That's the thing. They have the Detroit Lions on Sunday Night Football, Mike, and that's why I bring this up. I believe that, you know, ultimately they want Sony Michel to be their guy. I think this is an eventual kind of thing, right? But like you said, it was against Jacksonville. The game script was not in their favor. But I think there's an opportunity for a Sony Michel breakout or some Sony Michel value this week because you saw, you know, just the 13, like you said, against Jacksonville. The Detroit Lions have been getting gashed all season long, right? Breida went off on them last week. Crowell with a long run week one, right? could this be where Sony Michel kind of takes that mantle? I think game flow will be a little bit different than it was last week, and the Detroit Lions are no Jacksonville Jaguars. I actually think, and Burkhead, we know, the concussions, the knee, like, I think this could be the start of the ascension for Sony Michel.
I'm with you in theory. I probably will start him in one, maybe two leagues. I have him in more places than I suspected.
We have him.
Three or four leagues. Yeah, I know. And I think we're going to be starting him. So on the other side of the coin for this week is the Detroit Lions running back snap count. Kerryon Johnson led the way, 36 offensive snaps. That's almost half of the offensive snaps. Theo Riddick out there for 28 of the offensive snaps. Obviously, he's in on a lot of passing downs. And LeGarrette Blount, who started, only saw 17 offensive snaps. Now, they got down in that game, had to throw their way back into it. That's never going to be a game script that favors LeGarrette Blount, and I would not have recommended starting him because of the way that that game script looked going in, with a lot of points to be scored, 57 they put up combined, even if some of it was garbage. But there you go. Kerryon Johnson at least getting out there for nearly 50% of the snaps. I would imagine that would go up.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I guess my question on this one is, I've seen Kerryon Johnson there in some passing situations in Detroit as well. I guess my question back to you real quick, I know we have the break coming up, Blewett, but like, how confident are you that Theo Riddick maintains 100% of the kind of PPR load? I can see eventually Kerryon Johnson becoming something of a three-down back for Detroit.
Well, he better be if they're spending that kind of cap, that kind of draft capital on him in the NFL draft. So I agree. I actually don't have any shares of Theo Riddick this year. I thought because they drafted the rookie, well, I'm not a big believer in their running game at all. But because of the emergence of Kenny Golladay as a good third option in the passing game, it made Theo Riddick less valuable to me.
Right.
Many people projected Kenny Golladay to be really good, and he saw 92% of the offensive snaps this past week, more than Golden Tate. Marvin Jones saw all of them at 100%. So I think that makes Theo Riddick less valuable because of Golladay, not even just because of Kerryon Johnson. We'll come back. We're going to take a look at the QB situation in the NFL. It's Mike and Dane on FST. Join us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network after the break.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Back on FST, rocking out. Nice production by Chris Bavona. Some injury stuff to get through. The Falcons just continue to be the walking wounded. They placed guard Andy LaVitra on IR with a season-ending triceps injury, so yet a third guy lost for a significant amount of time. They already lost Keanu Neal and Deion Jones on the defensive side of the ball. Now the rushing attack, or pass blocking and run blocking attack takes a hit here. LaVitra is a good veteran.
Well, Devontae Freeman also.
Yeah, Devontae Freeman's on the shelf for a few weeks. I think Tevin Coleman's really capable, though. I know they like to go play the 1-2 punch, but Tevin Coleman is really capable. I don't think they lose a ton there. We'll see what Ito Smith has as a change of pace back, but he got a whole bunch of touches the other day and did pretty well. The Jets have Marcus May, Josh Martin, Neil Sterling not practicing. The latter two are probably out. They're going to try and get Marcus May out there. Hugh Jackson said Emmanuel Ogba won't play Thursday night versus the Jets. Been dealing with an ankle injury.
Landry's limited also in practice.
Yeah, Jarvis
for that Thursday night football. That's a big one.
Something to keep an eye on there for sure. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. We'll see if he practices today. You'd really want him out there. But for these Thursday night games, the coaches kind of have to change their rules. The no practice, no play thing can't be done on a Thursday night game. If a guy's a little banged up, it might take him till Friday to feel better, but he's got to go out there on Thursday night and do it. So having a little fun here. Real quick, waiver wires. We talked about it at length yesterday. A few guys that I saw on my waiver wires last week in my leagues, Andy Dalton, Ryan Fitzpatrick was still available in certain leagues. I got to be honest, I didn't pick him up in any of them. Maybe I'm an idiot, but I didn't want to. I have good quarterback situations all around, so I just don't know. Do I start Ryan Fitzpatrick over Matt Ryan? Like, I'm probably not doing that this week, so I didn't pick him up. And I already have other guys like Stafford and Roethlisberger and Mahomes and Luck and Wentz, like Breeze. Right. These are all my quarterbacks. Rivers, that's my quarterback situation across my league. So I'm not going to bring in Fitz to bench those guys in most instances. I'm sorry I didn't have him for the first 2 weeks, but I'm as shocked as anyone.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think there's some scenarios where you ride the wave and others where you're absolutely right. Like, are you going to start him? So why spend the fab budget? Why spend the waiver claim? The one difference I'll say is this. Someone asked me, like, you know, do I drop insert normal quarterback here, whether it's Stafford or anybody else for Fitzpatrick? But they clarified for me, Blewett, that it was an 8-team league. And in that situation, I say go ahead and do it. In that situation, I say ride the Fitzmagic wave, because when eventually it comes crashing down, and it will at some point in an 8-team league, you know, you're kind of waiver wire replacement level guy that you'll be able to pick up after the magic is over will still be okay. So in that situation, right. I say go get it, ride the wave, juice the orange, and, you know, take advantage of the magic.
Totally agree with you. So before we get back to the last thing, we're going to do a really hard look at quarterbacks in these last 10 minutes or so. So head on over to DailyRoto.com. It's a site that has produced $7 million winners, and click on Go Premium. There you're going to gain access to a line optimizer that's going to help you compose your daily fantasy rosters on both FanDuel and DraftKings. Not only has DailyRoto.com produced 7 millionaires, but it's produced millions more in winnings for its subscribers. And if it's sports wagering you're into, well, click on the new sports betting tab, where you'll be able to use the same tools and algorithms that's produced all those winnings from money line picks, picks against the spread, game totals, and player props, where you can capitalize player performances on without having to worry about salary caps. This is so poorly written. That's DailyRoto.com, and click on Go Premium, the industry website where millionaires are made, literally. So the snapshot, the QB snapshot. This is something that I do as an exercise all throughout the year. I update it every week. I take a look at where guys played in college. I take a look at what the quarterback situations look like heading into the rest of the year and next year and the year after that. And by my math, Dane, we have basically 19 guys that are effectively locked in where the teams are good with their quarterback situation for now. You can quarrel with a couple of them, but I'm going to do it really rapid fire. Trubisky, Josh Allen. Right now, it's Fitz and Winston. Rivers.
Yeah, but that's not locked in, right?
Yeah, that's true. So I'm going to eliminate that one.
Okay.
So eliminating that one. Mahomes, Luck, Prescott.
Yep.
Wentz, Ryan.
Yep.
Darnold, Stafford, Garoppolo, Rodgers, Cam Newton, Jared Goff, Russ Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Marcus Mariota, Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith. That's the way I look at it. The next 24 months, I think they're pretty good. So I eliminated the Bucs from there. We're down to 18 that are set in stone. Okay. Right now, Tyrod Taylor is the QB, but they're effectively locked in on Baker Mayfield long term. So that's a settled situation. So the Bucs
same with
really
the Cardinals.
Right, Rosen, so I'm going to add that back in. They have a long-term solution there.
Answer,
but here's
yeah.
some so here's some quarterbacks I'm going to go through, and these guys, tell me one by one what you think. Andy Dalton, playing well so far. I just told you can pick him up on the waiver wire, but the Bengals aren't committed to him monetarily after this season.
Right, I think this is the kind of situation where the heir apparent will be drafted.
Right, exactly. Case Keenum. They've locked him in for a couple of years. I think Elway got so frustrated with drafting QBs, he was like, you know what? I need to stabilize this. I'll take Case Keenum for a couple of years. But again, I think they're likely going to be drafting somebody.
Yep, I agree with you. Don't sleep on the kid Chad Kelly out of Ole Miss. This is a kid who was Jim Kelly's like nephew or whatever. He's had a lot of injuries. He slung it at Ole Miss. He was one of the guys that beat Alabama. So I do want to mention that, but I don't think he's anywhere close. He, I can see being
a
guy because I never. Yeah. I don't think John Elway, though, takes the time to develop someone. I think he got burned by the Paxton Lynn kind of thing. This, I believe Tyrod Taylor would be perfect in Denver. You get a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over with that defense that they have in Denver. I think that's where Tyrod Taylor could go, or excuse me, Tyrod, once Cleveland goes to Baker Mayfield. Remember, Tyrod will be out on the open market again. I would love a guy for Tyrod in a place like Denver or even in Jacksonville.
Yeah, so Phil Rivers never gets talked about it being the end of his career. I don't know if it's East Coast bias and we don't talk about him enough, but Phil Rivers has played more games than as many games as Eli and Ben Roethlisberger. He never misses games, but he's really good. So he's there until he's not. He's a difficult guy to really project where the end of his career will be, because he's always been a little bit turnover prone, but they're very comfortable with him. Nobody's ever challenged. They never draft anybody underneath him. They pick up guys like Kellen Clemens and Geno Smith to back him up, and he's in there for the long term, or at least for the next couple of years.
Yep, this is one where I think like San Diego, Los Angeles, in the next year or two, they spend like a second round pick on a quarterback and start the process to cultivate him, much like the Giants tried to do with Davis Webb and it was unsuccessful, like the Steelers are trying to do with Dobbs and Mason Rudolph. I don't think they use a first round pick so they could signal to Philip Rivers, hey, we're still going for it, but I think they spend a second, a third, or fourth round kind of pick on a quarterback in the next year or two.
Agreed. Ryan Tannehill, big year for him, for his career, for the Dolphins, because it will determine. They passed on a quarterback this year in the draft. I think it's actually, in retrospect, a good move. They didn't spend wildly, unless you were going to spend up for Darnold, in my opinion. I didn't want to really spend up for any of these guys. But Ryan Tannehill, big year for him, but clearly the long-term quarterback situation in Miami is a question mark.
Yep, I think Ryan Tannehill will be a backup elsewhere in the NFL soon enough. And I think Miami, I've said this before, I mean, they're off to a 2-0 start, so maybe I'm wrong. But I think Miami is going to be a team that's up towards the top of the draft or will trade draft picks to get up there. I think they do two things. I think they draft a quarterback early, like this year, and I think they could be a landing spot for a guy like Joe Flacco to serve as a bridge to this number one draft pick in the short term.
Yeah, you got the Giants, who Eli is looking rough. The offensive line is a function of that. Kyle Lauletta, is he a guy that you can count on to be the one who's going to carry the torch from Eli? I don't know. That seems like a very unclear succession plan in my mind.
Yeah, I thought Teddy Bridgewater was an option for these Jets. Remember about Teddy Bridgewater as well. This is a guy, whether it's in New Orleans to, you know, take the baton from Breeze eventually, or in this same kind of vein as a Tyrod Taylor that will be sought after in the open market. I thought Teddy was a good landing potentially for the Giants because of that same thing you're saying. But yes, the Giants need to address it, but it seems like they're all in with Eli for a short window here.
So Dane has mentioned the three guys that are part of this discussion, which is really what we are leading towards. And it's that you have to remember, in some of your dynasty leagues and keeper leagues, and even this is an NFL discussion as well, Joe Flacco, Teddy Bridgewater, and Tyrod Taylor are currently starting for teams that are likely don't have them in the plans for next season. And Teddy Bridgewater is going to be a free agent. Now, it seems that the Saints want him to be their quarterback. They have set up a succession plan. Additionally, though, the Saints are going for it. They did what the Giants should have done. I'm just talking about in the offseason. Clearly, this offensive line isn't going to allow the Giants to do anything. But the Giants setting up Eli's backup as a fourth-round draft pick is a terrible decision from a personnel standpoint. Because if something happens to Eli, and he's actually getting the snot knocked out of him every week right now, if something happens to him, then it's going to be a mid-round rookie starting for the Giants, and that does not inspire confidence in the rest of the team to make the playoffs. Teddy Bridgewater would have been a good idea for the Giants, and I actually think, you mentioned Tyrod Taylor going to Denver, I think this West Coast offense with Pat Shurmur, Tyrod Taylor would be good in New York if Eli is done after this year.
Yeah, I think that's viable as well. I always just like the match of a guy like Tyrod because we know he doesn't turn the ball over, that ball security. So I think it's a great fit with a kind of dominant defense, right, to kind of implement that approach. You know what I mean? That idea of running in defense, like what Jacksonville is trying to do, the way Denver has won in the past. I think Terod is a great quarterback for that, you know, mentality of a team.
Yeah, Bavona whispered to us, Chris Bavona, our producer, whispered that they need offensive line. I think we know that. I think everybody knows that.
I'd say so.
I think everybody in the world knows that the Giants need several more NFL-quality offensive linemen. But going through the last few, Jags are not really committed to Bortles long-term, but honestly, if he keeps playing well, what are they going to do? They have a team that might rip off 12 wins this year.
I think this is ridiculous. If they had Alex Smith, if they had Tyrod Taylor, they would win the Super Bowl. If they had Alex Smith, they're a Super Bowl contender.
Interesting. He does play a risky
type
of ball.
They did a disservice in the offseason by not moving on from Blake Bortles.
We can continue this tomorrow. Derek Carr, question mark, and a few others. But just wanted to take a look at that. Dana and I will be back tomorrow previewing the Thursday game on Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.